Blog Talk Radio.
みんなの未来だ。
さあ、この腕に抱こう。
地球、僕たちの星。宇宙、僕たちの世界。未来、僕たちの明日。みんな、僕たちのもの。
Okay. James Bossick, Conservatives Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. That, of course, the one and only, the inimitable Taku Izumi, making, that was the main theme from the 1967 smash hit, The X from Outer Space. Now, you could probably guess from the title of that film, The X from Outer Space, thought it being a monster movie, right? Well, of course. And you'd be right. It is a kaiju Japanese monster movie, so you got a giant. Well, it's not giant. Actually, they're kind of small because he's Japanese. But the way they photograph him, they make him look giant. A suit actor in a rubber suit with some kind of exotic dinosaur-esque, gigantic, huge space monster. And you would think Japanese monster movie like that, the music would be a bit more ominous. But no, that's not the case. And I just happened to be going through a kaiju phase here over the last few months with Godzilla and King of the Monsters and Godzilla versus Kong and all that mess. And this was, yeah. And I said, well, I'll just watch this, see what this is. I haven't seen it there. Never seen it before, and that was the opening theme to X from Outer Space. But I digress. It is nice to be back here with you. A couple of weeks we haven't done a Tuesday show. One thing, then another. We're down to the end of the year in the school business. We're in May, you know, and we'll be in high school, secondary schools. Be letting out in a few weeks. The seniors have already gone, so we're left with the underclassmen for couple more weeks, and then school's out for summer. And it's just been kind of wild. I'm not exactly sure why, but compared to this time last year, I'm broadening your horizons, Gary. Okay. Anyway, and it's just been kind of nuts in terms of scheduling and time, and I just got away from me. So anyway, I had other things that I really had to get taken care of. Nothing serious, but just things that needed done, like getting the yard squared away because it was the only chance I had to do it. So, you know, we had to do the show, and I can't do the show because the grass is getting on my nerves, man. So anyway, it's good to be back. It's good to be back. Tuesday, and I've been thinking about this for a while anyway, and this has given me the opportunity to see what I'm going to do. Not dead air. I'm just getting ready to tell you what I'm going to do. Looking at doing away with the Thursday show entirely. Been doing it for a long time. We've been all over the map with this stuff, and – Originally, it was Fridays. Or at one point, we moved to Fridays from somewhere else. And we were Fridays for a long, long time, and I really dug it. Mark was right behind us, and, you know, 2 hours of radio, and it was really good. And then I'm not sure something happened. Anyway, we moved to Thursdays. And Thursdays are really cool, but I think now that for the summer, we may be moving to another two-hour show. We'll keep a two-hour program here on Tuesdays, and we, in all likelihood, go to a two-hour program on Friday. Or one other day during the week. Not exactly sure when that's going to be. Gary Benford with United Patriots Uprising is going to be on every other Monday. That's not going to change. And I toyed with the idea of just going opposite him on the Mondays. He wasn't on. I would be. I mean, I really haven't come up with, you don't like that idea? Dude, is that like the middle finger upside down? What kind of? Oh, no, that's a thumbs down. I'm sorry. Never mind. Anyway, we'll see what's going on with that. It's all still up in the air. And, of course, we have a recorded version of the program on the Mojo 5.0 radio network, mojo50.com. If for some reason you aren't listening, you really should be, because it is some of the best in libertarian conservative talk radio. I am dry as dust. Gary's hating on the song. Doesn't like Asian people. He's kind of racist against Asian people. So he's going to say, yeah, what it is. Anyway, no, he's not. I'm just teasing. The song sucks. But to me, it stood out for some reason, maybe because of its suckiness. And those to go, you. Where are we going to start tonight? You think I'd be all over the place with that because I haven't been here in 2 weeks. But I'm not. I think what we're going to do is we're going to start off with Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci in the news again. And it's not good. It was the doobie. What? Okay. What were we talking about? Oh, Dr. Fauci. He's, you know, it was about this time a year ago. And I was in the gym one day with my brother Bernie. We were lifting weights. And I coined the term Faucius and Faucism. And Faucism was that tyranny that we saw from Dr. Anthony Fauci. And Faucius were those people who were advocates of that tyranny. That's kind of been what it's been, all right? He is the highest paid bureaucrat in the United States. He makes more money than the President of the United States. No joke. Close to $500,000 a year. We've gone from we don't need any masks to wearing two masks to you can go on a cruise, you can check out stuff on Grindr for hookups, it's all cool. You can go to Chinatown to where we are now, okay, to where we are today. We've just run the spectrum, the gamut, insane experiments fundamentally in tyranny, experiments in tyranny and authoritarianism that we've seen. And we've seen it with Bill de Blasio, and we've seen ample dollops of hypocrisy on the side with these people. Gretchen Whip, her husband tried to pressure some boating company to get his boat in the lake before anybody else last spring. Then she puts the touch on some Michigan businessmen, and they loan her their private jet so she can go down to Florida, where she told other Michiganders not to go. And I said, you see it all over the business. You got Gretchen Whitmer, you got de Blasio, the mayor of New York, you got Cuomo, that grandma killing son of a bitch. You've got no shortage. You got Gavin Newsom. You got Wolf in Murphy in New Jersey. Wolf in Ohio. Whitmer in Michigan. Wolf in Pennsylvania. Wolf in Pennsylvania. Newsom in Colorado. Newsom in California. Jay Inslee in Colorado. All these guys are bad, man. They're all bad. And they put up these ridiculous authoritarian, draconian measures for the public safety. And it's all just a bunch of crap when you look at Texas and Florida, environments with the least governmental restrictions on social distancing and mask mandates. All that rhubarb. And they're getting along fine. They're living life just about like we used to. Got a couple of clips, both of them kind of long, but they're worthy of it. Tucker Carlson first, as I scroll furiously through the playlist. One of these days, I'm going to have to come up with a better system. But it ain't going to be today, so don't get on me about it. Trump. I've got a lot of Trump. I got to clean out, too. All right, here we go. Tucker calls out Fauci. 9.5 minutes, 10 minutes, but I'm really fond of Tucker, and he lays it out, and we give him all the time. That's a good thing about two-hour shows. We don't have to butcher this stuff up. I can give you the whole thing. Anyway, here we go. Tucker on Fauci. And oddly enough, yesterday, Dr. Fauci was on Capitol Hill going at it again with Rand Paul. Here we go.
In a masked world, human beings never really touch each other. Is that public health? No, it's not public health. It's a kind of punishment. Tony Fauci is punishing the country, us, everyone. The question is, why is he doing that? Maybe he likes it. That's possible. But you've got to think that at least part of Tony Fauci's authoritarian germ hysteria is a cover for something else. Could it be that Tony Fauci is trying to divert attention from himself and his own personal role in the COVID-19 pandemic?
Wuhan.
Now, what do we mean by that? We cannot recommend more strongly a new piece by Nicholas Waite, who for more than 50 years has been one of the preeminent science writers in the world. For 30 years, Nicholas Waite worked for the New York Times. He edited the science section there, but this piece did not run in the New York Times. It ran on Medium. And the piece explains where this virus almost certainly came from. In it, Nicholas Waite makes it clear that more than any other single living American, Tony Fauci is responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. Waite lays out a nearly insurmountably large amount of evidence that this virus originated at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in central China. It seemed to make sense. This show and others had raised the possibility from the early days of the pandemic. But this piece all but proves it. At the time the outbreak began last fall, the Wuhan lab was conducting experiments on how to make bat viruses infectious to human beings. Those experiments were funded by American tax dollars. Those experiments were, their funding, approved and directed by Tony Fauci in Washington. By Tony Fauci. That is hard to believe, but it's true, and the piece lays it out. Many of the Wuhan experiments fell under the direction of a Chinese researcher called Shi Zhengli, known as the Bat Lady. She was China's leading expert on bat-borne viruses. Her job was to genetically engineer coronaviruses so that they infect human beings and do so as easily as possible. This work, Nicholas Waite notes, involved, quote, doing gain-of-function experiments designed to make coronavirus infect human cells. Now, why was this research going on? We'll have to ask the scientists who did it. But the fact remains, these were some of the most dangerous experiments ever conducted by mankind. And yet we know that China was not taking necessary safety precautions, and we should not be surprised by that. Several years ago, American diplomatic cables warned about low and lax standards at the Wuhan lab. In fact, the Wuhan facility was classified as a biosafety level 2 laboratory. What does that mean? Well, according to Richard Ebright, who's a molecular biologist at Rutgers, that is approximately the same level of safety that you would find in a dentist's office in America. So that lab conducting research, experiments on the coronavirus and how to make it transmissible to human beings resulted almost certainly in the infection of a lab researcher, and the virus spread from there. The first coronavirus patients, in fact, did not come from the so-called wet market, as we heard. That was a lie. The first patients of the coronavirus, in fact, were employees at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, at the lab.
Wuhan.
So once again, why would the Wuhan lab be conducting experiments like that in the first place? Well, we know that Tony Fauci had authorized payment for the research. For 5 years, from 2014 to 2019, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which Tony Fauci runs and has for decades, pumped money to a group called the EcoHealth Alliance. The EcoHealth Alliance is run by a man whose name you may recognize, Dr. Peter Daszak. Daszak contracted with Dr. Xi to conduct gain-of-function experiments at the Wuhan lab. Just before the pandemic became public knowledge, on December 9, 2019, Peter Daszak sat for an interview that was streamed online. In that interview, Daszak bragged about how easy it is to manipulate coronaviruses in lab experiments.
Coronaviruses are pretty good. I mean, you're a virologist, you know all this stuff, but you can manipulate them in the lab pretty easily. It's just spike protein drives a lot of what happens with the coronavirus, zoonotic risk. So you can get the sequence, you can build the protein, and we work with Ralph Barrick at UNC to do this. Insert it into the backbone of another virus and do some work in the lab.
So it was easy to weaponize.
So just days after that was shot, it became clear that this new version of coronavirus, this novel coronavirus, what we now call COVID-19, was running rampant through Wuhan, then China, and then the world. Since then, since the pandemic began, Peter Daszak, not surprisingly, has appeared on virtually every media platform available to him to deny, in the most strenuous and dismissive terms, that the Wuhan lab could be in any way linked to the outbreak, since, of course, he has very personal motives for claiming that. Quote, "The idea that this virus escaped from a lab is just pure baloney," he said last year. But that was a lie. It's not pure baloney. And a lot of smart people knew that right away. One of those people is Alina Chan, a molecular biologist at the Broad Institute at Harvard and MIT. She bravely wrote a paper about how the coronavirus's genome hadn't changed much over time, and that was odd, because that genome had gone through trillions of replications. According to Chan, that fact implied that the virus was designed for human-to-human transmission from the outset. The former director of the CDC also clearly understood this, and he, too, argued that the virus came from the Wuhan lab.
I am of the point of view that I still think the most likely etiology of this pathogen in Wuhan was from a laboratory, escaped. Other people don't believe that. That's fine. Science will eventually figure it out. It's not unusual for respiratory pathogens that are being worked on in a laboratory to infect a laboratory worker.
Millions of people have died of COVID-19, so it's not a matter of score settling or blame assignment to figure out where it came from. If you want to prevent the next global pandemic, you have to figure out how this one started. And so the World Health Organization said it would get to the bottom of it. The World Health Organization, of course, is beholden to China. And so it tried to hide the basic facts of the origins of this pandemic. And to hide those facts, WHO appointed none other than Peter Daszak as the only America-based representative on the investigative team looking into where the virus came from. In what turned out to be a sham report, that team concluded that it's, quote, extremely unlikely that the virus came from the Wuhan lab. Again, that's not true. The WHO's investigation into the origins of the virus was fraudulent, and that matters to public health globally. But one thing you'll notice is that Tony Fauci did not say that. Why? Because once again, he is implicated in it personally. The gain-of-function research that Peter Daszak was bragging about in the video we just showed you had, in fact, been banned explicitly by the U.S. government. There was a federal moratorium on the funding of exactly the kind of gain-of-function experiments that went on in the Wuhan lab to disastrous effects. So why didn't the U.S. government halt its funding of the lab in Wuhan? That is a central question, and Nicholas Wade, to his great credit, looked into it. And here's what he found. Quote, "Someone wrote a loophole into the moratorium. The moratorium specifically barred funding of any gain-of-function research that increased the pathogenicity of the flu, MERS, or SARS viruses. But then a footnote on page 2 of the moratorium document states that, quote, an exception from the research pause may be obtained if the head of the U.S. government funding agency determines that the research is urgently necessary to protect the public health or national security. And that's exactly the loophole that was exploited. Who signed off on this? Tony Fauci, possibly along with Francis Collins, the director of the NIH, invoked that special exemption in order to keep funding the Wuhan lab and the deadly experiments that were going on there, the experiments that clearly went so wrong. According to Richard Ebright, quote, unfortunately, the NIAID director, that'd be Fauci, and the NIH director, exploited this loophole to issue exemptions to projects subject to pause, preposterously asserting that the exempted research was, quote, urgently necessary to protect public health or national security, and thereby nullifying the pause. This wouldn't have happened if Tony Fauci didn't allow it to happen. That is clear. It's an amazing story. It is a shocking story. In a functional country, there would be a criminal investigation currently underway into Tony Fauci's role in the COVID pandemic that has killed millions and halted our country and changed it forever. So why isn't there a criminal investigation into Tony Fauci's role in this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, there ought to be. I mean, the dude's, he's a crook. There are emails, Freedom of Information Act stuff, that's been released concerning Dr. Fauci back in the days when Hillary Clinton was stomping across the earth. Her first, I guess her presidential run. Excuse me. I'm going to have to hit the mute button for just a moment. Mowed the grass this afternoon before we came in to do the show, and yeah, that's right. We didn't dose before we went out, so we'll probably just have to take care of that now. But Fauci's a fan. He was a fanboy of Hillary's. He loved her, and there were a couple of gushing emails that were sent to Cheryl Mills, who was Hillary Clinton's chief of staff during that time. And this would have been right around the time that she was testifying in front of Congress. What difference at this point does it make? Well, that was about that time. And they were, like I said, they were kind of gushing, and he loved her. But I don't even want to talk about that part of it, okay? Because that could easily be pointed to as a motivator. You know, he's a Hillary guy. He's not a Trump guy. And he's in a unique position to where he can manipulate things and kind of massage events to detrimentally affect the Trump administration. I think to a certain extent he did. But I don't want to talk about that part of it. Because while I believe that backstory there, that Fauci, Cheryl Mills, Hillary Clinton backstory, you know, okay, that's great for establishing his bona fides as a left-wing moonbat. But I'm going to talk about that. I want to keep it a little more simple than that, and I don't think it – and that may have its role to play. Guy's been around 40 years. He wears a lab coat, but – he'd probably be damned to tell you when the last time he was in a lab actually doing honest-to-God research. He's a bureaucrat. He's a head. But with the trappings of virologists or immunologists, doctor that's been around working on a cure for AIDS, which he has yet to implement or develop, now all of a sudden, after quietly making a lot of money, a lot of U.S. taxpayer money, doing the kind of crap that we just heard Tucker Carlson talking about, he's thrust into the spotlight as America's foremost authority on how to deal with the flu, on how to deal with a virus that fundamentally has about a, you know, it's like a 98 and change percent survival rate for just about everybody. Are there risk groups, my God, just like there are for every other coronavirus season? That's what this is, coronavirus. Was it manipulated? Was it weaponized? Of course, this is not news to us. We knew about this from our pal Claire Lopez a year ago, talking about the bat lady and tracing this particular virus, which is native to bats in another region far away from Wuhan. And he can say anything. He's in the spotlight. He is deferred to by everyone, including for a time Donald Trump. And again, this is why I say I want to throw the political ideology angle of it out. I just want to toss it out. Now the guy's a celebrity. He's on television every damn day. First doing the pressers, the news conferences, the daily press conferences in the early days of this thing with President Trump. And then from there, all the friendly media outlets. He's been all over the map. He has said, you can wear a mask. Then he goes, hey, you know what? If one mask is good, two has to be better. And so this idiot walks around with two masks on. Now, ultimately, what I would submit at the end of the day with Fauci, he was simply seduced by the lights and the cameras and the celebrity. And if you stop and think about it, he's found a pretty good way to milk it for over a year now. Has the guy ever been off TV since this thing started? Think about it. In one way or another, it's either been television interviews, it's been testifying on Capitol Hill, where good old Rand Paul. I was scrolling through the index, and I've got quite a few of Rand Paul going after Dr. Fauci. And the one that I'm getting ready to play for you is from yesterday. He's back on Capitol Hill testifying. And coincidentally, the issue that's going to be covered with Rand Paul's questions to Dr. Fauci, the exact same thing that Tucker Carlson's talking about, and that is this influx of money, United States taxpayer dollars kind of money, moving through the auspices of the CDC or NIH, and probably some convoluted network of quasi-charitable industries. But anyway, it gets to the virology lab there in Wuhan, China. Wuhan. And he's the guy that green-lighted it. He's the guy that green-lighted American taxpayer dollars being taken out of the U.S. and sent to China, the virology lab there in Wuhan province. Thought I was going to say it. I didn't. See what I did? You're thinking zig and I zag. And he gives them this money, and they use this money to continue their research in how to weaponize this damn thing, to improve its efficacy in terms of infection amongst humans, human beings. As Hank Cow Dog would say. We can find that. Okay, here it is. And again, you know, it's a little bit longer clip, and I apologize for him, but I really don't feel bad about it anymore, because It's much better that you hear exactly what goes on back and forth or whatever subject A, B, or C is saying directly from their mouth than having me half-ass paraphrase it. Rand Paul, Dr. Anthony Fauci, I think this is from yesterday.
Dr. Fauci, we don't know whether the pandemic started in a lab in Wuhan or evolved naturally, but we should want to know. 3 million people have died from this pandemic, and that should cause us to explore all possibilities. Instead, government authorities, self-interested in continuing gain-of-function research, say there's nothing to see here. Gain-of-function research, as you know, is juicing up naturally occurring animal viruses to infect humans. To arrive at the truth, the U.S. government should admit that the Wuhan Virology Institute was experimenting to enhance the coronavirus's ability to infect humans. Juicing up superviruses is not new. Scientists in the U.S. have long known how to mutate animal viruses to infect humans. For years, Dr. Ralph Barrick, a virologist in the U.S., has been collaborating with Dr. Shi Zhengli of the Wuhan Virology Institute, sharing his discoveries about how to create superviruses. This gain-of-function research has been funded by the NIH. The collaboration between the U.S. and the Wuhan Virology Institute continues. Doctors Barrick and Shi worked together to insert bat virus spike protein into the backbone of the deadly SARS virus and then used this man-made supervirus to infect human airway cells. Think about that for a moment. The SARS virus had a 15% mortality. We're fighting a pandemic that has about a 1% mortality. Can you imagine if a SARS virus that's been juiced up and had viral proteins added to it, to the spike protein, if that were released accidentally? Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute.
Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
We do not fund...
Do you fund Dr. Barrick's gain-of-function research?
Dr. Barrick does not do gain-of-function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina.
You don't think inserting a bat virus spike protein that he got from the Wuhan Institute into the SARS virus is gain of function?
That is
not... You would
not
be in the minority because at least 200 scientists have signed a statement from the Cambridge Working Group saying that it is gain of function.
Well, it is not. And if you look at the grant and you look at the progress reports, it is not gain of function.
Yes, it is.
Despite the fact that people tweet that.
So
they
do you
about
still support
it?
Sending money to the Wuhan Virology Institute?
We do not send money now to the Wuhan Virology Institute.
Do you support sending money? We did, under your tutelage. We were sending it through EcoHealth. It was a sub-agency and a sub-grant. Do you support the money from NIH that was going to the Wuhan Institute?
Let me explain to you why that was done. The SARS-CoV-1 originated in bats in China. It would have been irresponsible of us if we did not investigate the bat viruses and the serology to see who might have been infected in China.
Or perhaps it would be irresponsible to send it to the Chinese government that we may not be able to trust with this knowledge and with this incredibly dangerous viruses. Government scientists like yourself who favor gain-of-function research...
I don't favor gain-of-function research in China. You are saying
naturally.
Things that are not correct.
Government defenders of gain-of-function, such as
true.
Yourself, say that COVID-19 mutations were random and not designed by man. But interestingly, the technique that Dr. Barrick developed forces mutations by serial passage through cell culture that the mutations appear to be natural. In fact, Dr. Barrick named the technique the no-see-um technique because the mutations appear naturally. Nicholas Baker of the New York Magazine said nobody would know if the virus had been fabricated in a laboratory or grown in nature. Government authorities in the U.S., including yourself, unequivocally deny that COVID-19 could have escaped a lab. But even Dr. Shi in Wuhan wasn't so sure. According to Nicholas Baker, Dr. Xi wondered, could this new virus have come from her own laboratory? She checked her records frantically and found no matches. That really took a load off my mind, she said. I had not slept for days. The director of the gain-of-function research in Wuhan couldn't sleep because she was terrified that it might be in her lab. Dr. Barrick, an advocate of gain-of-function research, admits the main problem that the Institute of Virology has is the outbreak occurred in close proximity. What are the odds? Barrick responded, could you rule out a laboratory escape? The answer in this case is probably not. Will you, in front of this group, categorically say that the COVID-19 could not have occurred through serial passage in a laboratory?
I do not have any accounting of what the Chinese may have done, and I'm fully in favor of any further investigation of what went on in China. However, I will repeat again, the NIH and NIAID categorically has not funded gain-of-function research to be conducted in the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You do support it in the U.S. We have 11 labs doing it, and you have allowed it here. We have a committee to do it, but the committee has granted every exemption. You're fooling with Mother Nature here. You're allowing superviruses to be created with a 15% mortality. It's very dangerous, and it was a huge mistake to share this with China, and it's a huge mistake to allow this to continue in the United States. And we should be very careful to investigate where this virus came from.
I fully agree that you should investigate where the virus came from. But again, we have not funded gain-of-function research on this virus in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, no matter how
you're parsing words, you're parsing it. There was research.
Yeah, we get it. We get it, Tony. Thanks. Dude's in love with the limelight. And look how many times he's flip-flopped on what he said about everything. He's not going to have any problem going in there in front of the, you know, in front of a congressional hearing and saying just whatever pops into his mind that will fit in that moment. And it won't be worthy of examination any longer than that. Oh, gosh. Man, I'll tell you what, listen, we're going to take a little break. We will be back with more of ACP after this brief musical interlude. You're listening to A Conservative Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio, Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com.
I can get to sleep. I think about the implications of diving in too deep and possibly the complications, especially at night. Worry over situations. I know we'll be all right. Perhaps it's just imagination. Day after day it reappears. Night after night my heartbeat shows the fear. Another day.
1971, 72. I was but a wee little nipper, but right about there. Blues, not Blues Traveler. Well, I can't remember. Anyway, welcome back. Conservative Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio, blogtalkradio.com. As it stands right now, invariably, we more or less kind of sort of hit it Tuesdays and Thursdays live starting at 7 p.m. That's in the state of flux, getting ready to roll around, do something a little bit different. Not exactly sure what that's going to be yet. And we have a recorded version of the program over at mojo50radio.com. Mojo50radio. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is some of the very best libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, not to mention my brothers here, Gary, Benford, United, Patriots Uprising. Ah, Catskill, he's knocking it out of the park every other Monday. This Monday he was off. Last night he was off. Next Monday he's going to be coming back strong. Gary, looking forward to it, dude. We're going to be rocking the red here in just a few short weeks, and that's going to be terribly exciting. I can't wait to see you again, bud. And, of course, El Guapo, the handsome one himself, Mark Hoffman, Patriot Nation Radio Live, Thursday nights, 7 p.m. At 8 p.m. No, excuse me, 8 p.m. Right after me, I'm on 7 on Thursdays and Tuesdays both. One-hour program on Thursday, the 8 to 9-hour El Guapo. Well, am I through reaming old Fauci out? Yeah, I think I am for the most part. The border is an open sieve. They're bringing these people in all over, from all over the place. They're sending them. They're busing them. They're flying them. I think up to now it's already cost over $1 billion to bus and fly and hotel these illegal aliens all over the country to various points of insertion. It's been 47 days since the teleprompter reader-in-chief appointed Kamala Harris as his point chick on the border. Has not been to the border. In Chicago, he insulted the Guatemalan president. I think it was the Guatemalan president. And the coyotes keep slinging them kids over the fence, dragging them through the river, tossing them on the other side, raping a bunch of them on the way. And if our friend Michael Cutler were here, he would say that this is exactly the way it's going, that it is the design. And you know what I used to think, and with the very first time I heard him say that, which was early in our conversations after I'd met him a year and a half ago down at the first Rock the Red that Gary and I attended. And I would hear him say, I knew he wasn't lying to me. I knew because of this man's extensive background, his vast knowledge, he wasn't bullshitting. He was calling it like he saw it, and he saw it for almost 30 years. But in my mind, well, it was just like a lot of things. Sometimes it's just a very difficult concept for me to wrap my head around. You know, this government's supposed to be looking out for our best interests. And one of the ways that good governments are really good at looking out for the best interests of its citizenry is maintaining its border integrity. I'm not exactly sure if it originated from Michael Savage, but one of the things he used to say back in the days when I was tuned into the Savage Nation, you know, the three elements that define a nation, a country. Number one, it's borders. Number two, it's language. And number three, it's culture. that three-legged stool that defines the United States, or defines Canada, or Mexico, or Great Britain, or Ireland, or Scotland, or Afghanistan, or Egypt, doesn't matter where. They are universal. And the left, see, the cultural Marxists, the political Marxists, they understand that concept of that three-legged stool. And really, they need only attack one consistently and effectively, and when that leg collapses, in this case, let's say it's the border. The border collapses, likewise collapses our language and our culture. Ergo, the nation. It is an absolute, much like the firmness of the earth. It is unavoidable. The border's been under attack for a long, long time. It was opened up in Obama 2.0, in the second term of the Obama administration, this thing was opened up. Trains, convoys, we're bringing these through. You think it's any different now? No. These guys are still using the same type of logistics, the same type of logistical setup that they used in 2016, in 2014 and 15. It may be even better organized and greatly improved in terms of its numbers. But Joe Biden and mainstream news, the establishment news, will tell you, shut up, there's nothing going on, relax, it's all good. Not all good. We got problems. Seriously, we got problems. Everything is going according to plan. We think that it is a feckless, I love that word. I discovered that word during the second term of the Obama administration, I think. But anyway, yeah, and it's just been one that's been bandied about. Anyway, this ineffective, this incompetent, this cognitive delinquent in the White House, like that. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, cognitive delinquent. In the White House, you know, these. You've heard his speeches. You watched him campaign. Kamala Harris couldn't even carry her home state of California. I'm not even sure she got a full 1% of the vote in her home state. She and Fartboy. Swalwell, Eric Swalwell. God, what a blowhard. Unbelievable. It's working the way they want it to work. And the southern border, you know, you may as well just go ahead and say for all of it, you know, all of it, it's collapsed. And the United States is not in charge of that border. The cartels are in charge of that board. Same thing Mike Cutler and I talked about a couple of weeks back when it was no different. Same thing. Same thing. How on earth we regain control of a government so rampant, wanton corruption? Political hackery. I honestly can't think at this time of any prominent, and when I say prominent, I mean news show ready Democrat in Washington, D.C., that would not in a heartbeat sacrifice this country at the altar of his ideology. I don't care what they say, how they say it. Joe Manchin. Everybody's talking about Joe Manchin right now. He's standing tall and firm against the Democrats on the filibuster. Let me tell you something about Joe. Let me tell you a little something about Joe. talk a lot of people have historically spoken disparagingly about West Virginia and West Virginia. And there are stereotypes out there and New Georgia to bear that out. West Virginia is also home to some remarkably canny and unbelievably creatively corrupt politicians. Cecil Underwood, Jay Rockefeller, a Yankee, a New Yorker, a carpetbagger that came down here, was governor for about 1,000 years and senator for about 3,000 more. Arch Moore. I think it's Joe's uncle, A. James. The Honorable A. James Manchin, former Secretary of State. Joe has been in Washington, D.C. long enough where he digs it. He's settled in. He likes Washington. Washington's probably been pretty good to him. And he knows if he can hang tight and watch his step, Washington's going to be very good to him in the future. Joe Manchin also knows that the Democrat Party will allow him his grandstanding, his speaking truth to power, because it's going to go great with the folks back home, maybe even get him reelected, which will probably work out fairly well for Joe's future plans. But believe me, when the meat hits the metal, and Nancy says, okay, JoJo, done. I don't care what you got to do to change your story. I don't care how you got to spin it. I don't care what constitutional hang-up you're going to use, whether it's believable or not. We don't. You're voting do away with filibuster. You may take your chances and not thinking that it'll keep you in good with the center-right people of West Virginia. Okay, fine. Go ahead. Sooner or later, we'll crush you. So Joe's not going to get crushed. He's going to make faces, and he's going to raise up sand, and he's going to say all these reasons for why he's doing it and why he hates to do it, but why he's going to do it anyway. That'll be that. Hopefully he'll try and figure out some way to rehabilitate himself to the folks back home, or he'll just graciously remove himself from the West Virginia political scene and move into the lobbying business. Lots of money to be made in lobbying. A good old boy like Joe Manchin, who knows how to glad hand and bless the press the flesh, he'll do fine. I don't think it's any different on the, you know, look at all the Republicans that hated Donald Trump. They're no different than what you see on the left, okay? Worse, they're on our side. They claim to be on our side. They claim to be speaking truth to power and hating on Donald Trump. It's going to be tough to take back government so steeped in grift and corruption, in divisiveness, in hate. A small thing. Most of the great republics, if we look back through history, the Greeks and Romans, 200, 250 years, give or take, that's the arc. We're on the tail end. And while I'm not necessarily pessimistic. You know, one of the good things Gary Benford does on his program when he has people come on and we, you know, we assess, or they assess rather, the interesting times that we live in. Invariably, Gary will always ask his guests, what are some thoughts that we can take away from our talk that might lead us, you know, back from the edge a little bit, back from the ledge, back in the building. And I think that's a positive thing to do, because we have to keep our eyes on that. We have to accentuate the positive. We've got to do it all the time. It can be done. Will it be done by Donald Trump? I don't know. I can remember right there at the end of the, you know, we had all these legal avenues allegedly open before us at the end of the election there. And then one after another, you know, they all closed. And a lot of people said, you know, it's still going out. Willie Mays is up. Say, hey, kid, we're going to get it done. It's still going to happen. And it didn't. And, you know, it became clear that the systemic voter fraud that we have all seen, we've all been witness to, we've all seen a lot of the evidence, and I dare say there's a great deal more evidence out there that we haven't seen that, you know, leaves even the layman, the lamest of laymen, to know that, you know, it wasn't widespread, it wasn't nationwide or any of those things. You know, it was systemic. And there weren't irregularities. It was fraud. It was systemic fraud. It was organized. It was mapped out. All in the right places, all at the right time. And nobody, not even the Supreme Court, would stand up and do anything about it. Hell, they wouldn't even call them on it. Things are not in our favor. Government institutions, from the Department of Justice to the State Department to the FBI to Homeland Security to the IRS, have been weaponized against the American citizen. Nobody anywhere seems to know what to do about it. I'm still here, not dead here, just thinking it over. Can it be done? Will it be done by Donald Trump? No. In terms of, I'm sorry, I just don't see 2024 as where we're going. I just don't. Not with Donald Trump anyway. Ron DeSantis, however, he's okay. And the politicians, the Republican, the conservative politicians, the American first politicians that are going to be leading this vanguard are going to be put in place by Donald Trump. I'm convinced of that. This is still the core of the Republican Party. I think it's still very much his. But we have to remain ever vigilant. We have to remain ever watchful. We have to be really good in vetting our information sources. We've got to be really good in communicating. One another. I mean, you know, and Democrats get a message, they get in lockstep with it. Good, bad, or indifferent. And the messages always suck. And they're always in lockstep with them, like, you know, it's the greatest thing that ever happened, you know. but they stick to it. And we need that same kind of solidarity in terms of our message. One of the things, I guess we're just going to go ahead and move on. One of the things that's been in the news a lot here recently, critical race theory. It's being taught in schools. It's being implemented within the ranks of the United States military. It's being, thrown out in law enforcement agencies throughout the country. It's not cool. We got some stuff on it. Hopefully I got that. On critical race theory from our friends at Prager University. And, geez, I didn't realize I had that much Christmas music. Okay, great. What were we looking for? Oh, critical race theory, yeah. All right. Cuomo, got a lot of Cuomo clips. I hate that guy. Well, dang, wouldn't you know it? Okay, well, we'll do something else then. And it's a shame because I really want to, you get to, yeah, you know, this stuff just stacks up on you sometimes. That's just what goes on. But I tell you what we'll do. Go down here. I bet I did load that up. I know I did. Okay. I'll be glad when school's out. I rarely say that because I love my kids and I love the daytime gig. Ah, there it is. Prager University, what is critical race theory? We'll talk about this other stuff in just a minute. If you've heard the term, and I know you have, this is what it means. This is why it's so dangerous. It is not a good thing. And anybody who says it is lying to you or remarkably stupid or both.
Have you heard about critical race theory? I'm guessing you probably have. It has already insinuated itself into many institutions and is making rapid progress into others. If it takes hold, it will completely change the very nature of America and the way you live. Critical race theory holds that the most important thing about you is your race. The color of your skin, that's who you are. Not your behavior, not your values, not your environment. Your race. In critical race theory, if you are a member of a minoritized racial group, their term, not mine, you are a victim of a system that is rigged against you, a system that doesn't want you to succeed. On the other hand, if your race is privileged, you're an exploiter, whether you intend to be or not. Critical race theory begins from the assumption that racism occurs in all interactions. To see how this works, consider this thought experiment. Imagine you own a shop and two customers enter at the same time, one white and one black. Who do you help first? If you help the black person first, critical race theory would say you did so because you don't trust black people to be left alone in your store. That's racist. If you help the white person first instead, critical race theory would say you did so because you think blacks are second-class citizens. That's racist too. That's critical race theory. It can find racism in anything, even if it has to read your mind to do it. Critical race theory is a uniquely American invention. Brewed up at Harvard Law School in the 70s, now part of the academic and media mainstream, it is also uniquely un-American, because it rejects the core tenets of the American, classically liberal Judeo-Christian value system. It turns the bedrock American idea upside down. Here it is in the words of Richard Delgado and Gene Stefanchik, two leading proponents. Critical race theory questions the very foundations of the liberal order, including equality theory, legal reasoning, Enlightenment rationalism, and the neutral principles of constitutional law. It does this because critical race theory proponents assume racism is present everywhere and always, and they look for it critically until they find it. And they always find it. It has to be there because that's how the imperial European powers and then America set things up. Here, as in all dangerous academic theories, there is a kernel of truth. Human beings were not preoccupied with race until the 16th century, when Europeans began to explore and then colonize other parts of the world. Drawing distinctions between the races reached its peak in the 19th century with the widespread use of slave labor in North and South America. No one denies this. But since then, the Western world, and most especially America, has spent a lot of time, money, and blood breaking free of its racist past. It's been a rocky road for sure, but great progress has been made. Critical race theory says all this progress is a mirage. Racism never died, never even faded a little bit. It just hid itself better. Critical race theory, therefore, is not a continuation of the civil rights movement. It is, in fact, a repudiation of it. To critical race theorists, Martin Luther King was both wrong and naive. White Americans can never judge blacks by the content of their character. They can only judge them, always unfavorably, consciously or unconsciously, by the color of their skin. Ironically, not since the Aryan obsession in Germany in the 1930s and 1940s, or South African apartheid in the second half of the 20th century, has the social movement been so obsessed with race. Critical race theory is then, in a very real sense, a counter-American revolution. But that's a positive, not a negative, to those who subscribe to the theory. The American experiment was given a 400-year tryout, and it doesn't work. So let's scrap it. That's what they believe. Is that what you believe? I'm going to guess that most of you don't. So how do we stop critical race theory before it infects the brains of too many decent Americans, especially young people, and turns us into something we have never been and shouldn't ever want to be? The answer is simple. Refuse to accept it. Don't be intimidated by the heads I win, tails you lose logic of this self-destructive, America-hating, anti-reality idea. Don't be bullied into thinking that you're racist when you know you're not, or that you're a victim when you know you're not. Defend yourself while you still can. I'm James Lindsay, founder of New Discourses for Prager University. Thank you for watching this.
There you go. Kids are being taught this. I'm in the school business. In an area that is, I think, somewhat culturally insulated, and I don't mean that in a bad way. So I don't think that these things have taken full root as of yet. I fully expect them to, because I know the kind of people that are in the Board of Education offices. I can speak a little bit as to academics. I'm no stranger to the industry myself. My father taught at a local community college for, I don't know, 2,900 years. My mother taught in the public school system, likewise my brother. And lo, these last 17 years, I have also been in the school system as well, working with an awesome special ed kid. I've just been blessed overall to have been exposed to the children that I have. And working with them, it isn't here yet, but it will be. And it's very dangerous, people. It's very, very dangerous. You know, if you stop and think about it, this evening, every single topic we've covered, there haven't been that many because we kind of get in the weeds on some of this stuff, are places where the left has understood that they can produce, I don't think it's much of an exaggeration either, existential threats. And this is going to sound so square to the American way of life. And that is a very cliched phrase. But I was born in 1962, and I have seen firsthand the history of, you know, the last half of the 20th century. I was a witness to it. I was born it. And I think I had a pretty full taste of what that means, the American way of life, what that means. And that's a pretty complicated phrase. But it comes down to this. If you're going to make it anywhere on earth, no matter what it is you're doing, whether it be in science, whether it be in athletics, whether it be in business or agriculture or entertainment, whatever, if you're going to make it, the United States is going to give you the best shot at making it of any place on earth, period. People aren't flooding the borders from Texas to get into Mexico. It's the other way around. People aren't sneaking off of Key West in rafts made out of oil drums to go to Cuba. People aren't overstaying their visas in the Soviet Union. Okay, they're not. They're coming here. Now, here's a conundrum for you. I don't think there's a Democrat anywhere in the world who would disagree with you when you say, would you agree that America is a racist nation? And, hell yeah, they are. Whether we are or not, I'm just saying their ideology calls for it. You just heard the breakdown on critical race theory. Yes, that's what they're going to say. Who are they racist? Well, damn white people. They hate brown people. They hate black people. They hate anybody that's not white. They're racist. White people are racist. Yeah, they don't like the brown people. Exactly. So, if that's the case, why aren't we getting angrier about the fact that all these brown people and white people are coming into the country illegally? Well, we're not. Because we don't hate black people, brown people, or people of color, whatever they call them now, brown, black people of color. We hate the illegality. We hate the exploitation of these people by these progressive Marxists that are using them grew up this country. Do you think Nancy Pelosi, honestly, God cares about a 12-year-old girl who's getting butt raped by these guys two or three times a week as she's trying to get across? She does not care. She does not care. She doesn't care about any of those kids. She doesn't care about any of those weak people. She doesn't care about any of those women. Don't care about any of these people that are being abused and exploited. You don't care anything about them once they get here either. Because once they get here, they have suited her purpose. What is that purpose? You tell me. Nancy Pelosi doesn't care anymore about the taxpaying citizen, whether they're naturalized or it doesn't matter. Then she cared about that poor butt-raped 12-year-old girl. Don't care about them either. Nancy Pelosi and her pals care about power. They care about authority. They care about control. Care about the ability to use coercive force to bend those who are not agreeable to their will. Not dead air, just hanging out, thinking it over. I guess that's about it for right now. We're down to about 5.5 minutes left in the program. So I think what we'll do, I know what we'll do. Where you at? I know where you.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world. And we changed history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Asking the same question I ask every single time I play this, name a Democrat, any Democrat, who says things like this about our country. Name one. Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Presley, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Chuck Schumer. Schiffhead, Adam Schiff, Terry the Jowls Nadler, Feinstein, Boxer, Gavin Newsom, Blasio, Cuomo, Whitmer, anybody? I could have gone on for another 30 seconds and we wouldn't have found anybody. And that's all the time we got. God bless you guys. Like I said, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I don't know what's going to happen this Thursday. Maybe Friday, but I'll let you know at some point before we do the show. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you one other day here in this week, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. You got to take good care of yourselves. We'll see you then.